Welcome to Long Story Long. I'm your host, Lisa Curry. Today's guest is the incredibly talented Ashley Joyce. You've seen her on Gilmore Girls and Everyone's Doing Great on Hulu. And she is the writer, actress, producer of a new series called Zen Room that will be coming out. You got to keep an eye out for that. It's starring Sherry O'Terry, which is so fucking cool. Ashley is actually somebody I've known for a really long time. We went to high school together, so this is a really special episode. It was really fun to record and hear her full story, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Here you go.
Hey, Ashley, how are you?
Hey, Lisa. What's going on?
Nothing, just enjoying this, nice, what is it, 80 degree weather, whatever it is?
Yeah.
It's lovely.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. I've been walking my dog much later than normal because it's crazy. It's crazy hot.
You just got back into town from Chicago, right?
Yeah. Well, I've been back like a month or so from filming. So, I was back there in the middle of pandemic prior to everyone being vaccinated and filmed for a week there. And then, was with my dad for like almost a month after that.
That's so awesome. So I'll back it up and then we'll come back to it, 'cause I'm so excited to talk to you about your project. So for anyone listening, Ashley and I went to high school together, which is wild
because
we both ended up in LA and we're doing our thing and like, we're killing it.
Do you think this is the first ever podcast of two people from Crown Point, Indiana? Probably not that, but maybe entertainment.
Yeah, but if there's another one, it's like about making pies or crocheting or something. Like it's sure not about
or like a very messed up murder or something.
Yeah, although I'm like, I don't know of that many murders. I mean, I know of like a couple murder rumors.
I don't want to get too deep, but while I was living there as a child, there was a murder suicide next door to me when we were six. Whoa. And then a murder like 3 years later in the same block.
Oh, wild.
So my experience there was it's a sleepy town, crazy, weird shit happens there.
It's wild. Do you ever feel like this is I know this is a flawed thing and this is way off topic, but somebody was like, well, you know, why do women like watch all these murder shows? And I'm like, because it makes me feel safer. It's like, it feels like, you know, how whenever there's a plane crash, you're like, well, obviously there's not going to be another one tomorrow. So it feels safer to fly. Same kind of concept where I'm like, oh, if I know of all of these murders, it's not going to happen to me, which is false.
Right.
But
I don't know. I don't know what the psychology behind it is, but I definitely watch a lot of murder shows. Like Thursday, middle of the day, I was so pissed off because my internet wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And I was in the middle of watching this like 5-part murder documentary that was all in French in English subtitles.
Ooh,
and
even
I was
better.
Like, first of all, why am I watching this at 2 p.m. on a Thursday in the middle of the day?
To protect yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly
right.
What it is.
I think you're right. I'm prepared for the French murderer.
Yeah. So we both went to Crown Point High School and we went through, you killed it in drama. And I just kind of was like this weirdo on the outskirts. I feel like from my perception, I was just kind of like, please let me in. And they were like, no. I went on the drama field trip.
I feel like I really first met you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like totally. I knew you, but that was, we are Thespian Society.
Yeah.
Which,
we were kind on the periphery.
Right. Yes. You're right. I was the president of the Thespian Society organized the New York trip, which that in itself, I went twice. I went my sophomore into junior year and then senior year, right after I graduated, and you're a year younger than me. That was crazy. We saw like insane shows. When I think about how much did that cost my mom? Because we didn't have a whole lot of money. My dad's a steel worker. My mom, a stay-at-home mom. So like, how much did that cost them? Or it was just a great deal. And we saw like four amazing Broadway shows while we were there.
Absolutely.
So that was incredible.
Do you know what's really hilarious is, speaking of what did our parents pay, I forged my parents' signature on all of that paperwork. And
oh my God.
They just, like, I just went on this trip because like they were a little checked out at the time, mm-hmm. and to say the least. And so I don't even know if they were really aware that I was going to New York. I just went. And because of this, they didn't really pay for that trip. I went on that trip and one other out-of-state trip with Crown Point High School that I forged my parents' signatures on. And because of all of this, my parents owe the school money. So when I graduated, I did not get a diploma.
Oh my God. Lisa.
We were in the auditorium, you know, like we're at the Star Plaza.
Yeah, yeah.
And I walk across the stage and they hand you the little leather bound book. And I open mine up and I swear to you, it's a bill. Mine had a bill inside of it. And I was like, whoop. Like, I don't have a diploma. Oh my God.
That is such a great rock star story, though. Okay. You're like, I'm getting out of this small town. Yeah, I don't give a shit.
I'm not asking them permission because the answer is going to be no. And I'm not accepting that answer. And that's pretty much how I live my whole life, by the way.
That is ridiculous. So great. So, did you ever get your diploma?
No. And I think the balance is like $500 or something. But now I'm like, I mean, I already went to Purdue. I'm like, I don't need a paper diploma. It doesn't matter. I'm like, fucking keep it. I'm not giving you $500 for a certificate that says that I did core 40 learning. I'll print my own online.
That is so awesome. That is very, very like renegade rogue. I love it. Ridiculous. I love it.
I definitely got permission.
Mm-hmm. I definitely got permission for everything that I did.
Of course. Well, it was harder, I think, for you too, because of your whole, my brothers were so much older than me that they were way out of school, where your family was a little more connected to the school. So it's not like, I don't think you could pull some shit with your brothers not noticing.
My brother was a teacher.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, I just got done talking to somebody about this the other day about like how much that was I don't think my brother, first of all, he like started teaching there at 22 and he's like 9.5 years older than me. Uh-huh. So like he wouldn't have been thinking about my well-being when he decided to come home to his high school and start teaching. Yeah. Ultimately, it wasn't a great move for him either to be back in his hometown teaching. But for me, it sucked because like I made out with a boy. He coached football and baseball. Mm-hmm. Great. He was like everybody's favorite coach and teacher, cool guy. But for me, that meant that all these boys were like, I'm not dating Coach Bush's sister. And I want to, and like, I do remember specifically Danny Deno, if you're listening, probably not. I made out with him on like a Friday at some party that had like tents in the backyard, which I didn't do those things. I wasn't like a cool girl. I was fun and I was friends with people, but I wasn't the girl that you made out with on a Friday. So it was like the first time I had the chance to do that and was excited about it and thought maybe we were going to start dating. Probably thought I was going to marry him at that point. Yeah. But by Monday, my brother made him run laps at like practice because my brother thought it was funny. So he did not date me. And ended up dating Carrie Larson right after that. Carrie Larson was your age and they're married. So they did get married.
That's wild.
They are still married with children, I believe. So funny. But it was such a heartbreaker.
Thanks to your brother, I hope they put him in their vows, I guess.
Truly, truly. He was such a jackass for doing that. He thought it was funny. But it was really difficult to be under the shadow of all that. Cause I wasn't really an individual, which meant that when I became an adult and like was finally out on my own in Chicago, I was like, well, who am I if I'm not one of the Bushes? Like nobody knows my mom and dad. Nobody knows my brothers. Like who is that? And
that's wild.
Yeah. It's nice to be from a small town for some reasons and like,
absolutely.
And other things, not as much.
So when you were, I feel like I know the answer to this. I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but like, did you know you wanted to be an actress when you were a kid, when you were like little?
Oh no. I mean, I have two older brothers and they were much more like sports focused. I thought that's what I had to do to like survive in my family dynamic for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And my parents are like unbelievably supportive. And so when I started to, Mrs. Chiquina was the teacher, the drama teacher, that I became friends with her daughter. And she exposed me for the first time. I think I was like in sixth grade. She did some little play. And that was the first time I had ever done anything like that. Really? I did dance lessons. Uh-huh. Like, I mean, like that was something I did, but I never had.
Wait, did you go to like Miss Hildy's or Hilda's or some shit? Like
I didn't go to Hildy's. I was in Miss Shirley's downtown. Okay. And like the, like you walked upstairs and there were all these like little outdoor, like, yeah, yeah, I did that.
A wild ride.
I think, yeah, she was like crazy. I remember hearing mm-hmm. those stories.
Yeah, her the younger one was like a drunk. Anyway, what, go ahead. Sorry. You're
that tracks. That actually tracks. I kind of remember that. No, I mean, my mom was ready for a girl, you know, like she didn't really want another athlete. Yeah. So she was like dance lessons and pink and all these things, but they didn't do anything like theater themselves. Mm-hmm. She was a cheerleader and like whatever. So when I like started to do that, I was just like, okay, this is a fun thing. And then the more and more I got interested in it, there wasn't that thing in junior high, but in high school, like a family friend who was a few years older than me did the High School Musical when I was like in eighth grade. And I went to see her and I can remember like sitting in the auditorium being like, oh, I want to do this. Like, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And then really focused on it as soon as I got to high school. And then it wasn't until my senior year that I was like, really, I think junior, I was getting like a lot of leads mm-hmm. and senior year, it was like, oh, this is going to be like my year to be on top. And I never thought I could do that as a real career.
Like, really? Even when you were like killing it?
No. Oh no. I mean, like, again, like my dad is a steel worker mm-hmm. who writes poetry on the side, like very, like, I mean, but I just thought you needed a real job. Like, that's, yeah. And I thought I wanted to be, being so close to Purdue, I always thought I wanted to be a vet. Uh-huh. And so it was my dad actually, like tears. But he was like, I've said like, yeah, I guess I'll like do music business or something. Cause mm-hmm. there was a good music business school at Butler. And by then I was like, I think I want to be in an art type of thing, but I'll do the business side of it, you know, like something that's going to actually pay the bills. And my dad was like, why aren't you majoring in theater? It's like all you love. Why don't you want to do theater? And I was like, I can do that. You'll let me do that.
Right. Isn't it so wild that we think of like, why the fuck would you do the business side?
Right.
It's so funny that we think of that as, because my dad is also a steel worker and you know, for us to think like, that's not a real job. And it is like, it is a real job. Any job that you make money is a real job, you know, but it seems so far away, like astronaut or president or like where you're like, what? Nobody gets that.
Well, we didn't have any examples of that, you know, like I do have friends now. Some of my very close friends are from LA here now that I've lived here for a bit. And a couple of their parents were performers. And even if they're not like performers on the highest level where they've even had like major starring roles in television shows, they had friends and people they went to high school whose parents made a living in this business. Not even somebody whose name someone in Crown Point, Indiana would know from a magazine or a TV show, but they had examples that like, this is a very valid career. We didn't have that. You know, it's all about, as we talk so often about right now in this industry, representation. And that just wasn't representation that you or I had.
Yeah. It's really hard to picture that because like, I remember when I was a kid seeing like Johnny Carson on TV and thinking like, oh, he's just been like anointed in some way and not, because there's no way you don't. And I'm like, we're conversely, I'm like, I know how to be a steel worker. If I want to do that, I know how to join the union, you know?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. These are all things that like, we just had, the means. That was always something that was like really interesting to me. I dated a guy who lived like outside of Chicago in a community where like almost everyone are doctors. Mm-hmm. And when I first started dating him, he just like knew so much about medicine. And he wasn't a doctor. He was an actor as well. Uh-huh. But it was that he was around so many medical professionals that he just like knew how to be. That was just like something that he knew by osmosis, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So wait, you right after high school.
Yeah.
At what point do you decide like, oh, I can go into entertainment as a career? Like, is this what the mindset you're going into college with or?
No. Mm-hmm. No. And I went to Purdue, my first year I went to Purdue and, I was like kind of on the fence, Butler, Purdue, you know, all Indiana schools. Like I wasn't like jumping into, moving too far from home. Also because my parents were just like unbelievably supportive, but really didn't know, you know, about like auditioning processes when you're a senior in high school. Some people that I know just like are from schools where they understand like that you go to Carnegie Mellon, you go to NYU and you audition at all these schools on your senior year of high school. They just were like, oh, Purdue has a theater department, you know, like that made sense to them. Having no thought that it's an engineering school, perhaps not the best connections for someone that's studying theater. But I went down there again and a girl from Crown Point was studying theater there who was my brother's age. And I visited the school and I took classes with her and it was a really awesome program. And at the time, you know, I had done a lot of musicals in high school. And at the time, like by then I was like, I think I want to do Shakespeare. Like I wanted to be like a serious actor. And they did one musical a year. And then the rest was like more classically trained at Purdue. And they gave me a bunch of scholarship to go there, which again, that's awesome. I think was part of like me not wanting to be rejected anywhere else. I was like, oh, they want me. I'll go here. Yeah. You know, got there and it was like September 11th and the first year. So within 2 weeks of being at school. I mean, we just were just like, oh, we're here. We're ready to be adults and on our own. Oops. The world is not safe. And like, it's a wild feeling to feel like before that point, I just like never thought of being unsafe in this world until that very moment. So, to be completely honest, I got incredibly depressed. I hated it there. I hated it so much.
What was it about it that you really hated? Was it the structure or the lack of like community?
I just think I was the partying, like the like ongoing, like nobody was serious about, everybody was just having a good time. I think I was like a pretty serious teen where I was ready at that point to like get started with life. And I just was like, oh, everybody's just going to hang out here for 4 years. Like,
I think that that's also maybe like our dad's work ethic coming through us where we're like, well, you got to get to fucking work. How do we do this? We need to do this right now.
Yeah. I just was like, what are we going to do? We're going to hang out at Harry's for 4 years. And like, then what, you know? And because there was like a lot going on in the steel industry at that time. And I saw a job that my dad was like took because of being sold the bill of goods, that this was security and like this would provide your family forever. And it was like slowly. And as we are now 20 years later, looking at, you know, in reverse at it, it's exactly what happened of like, oh yeah, this isn't going to sustain families. Like why sell yourself to the man when it's, you've got to take care of yourself. And I think I saw my dad that having, you know, bought into that and then being in at later in life, being a little bit uncertain about the future of his career in that field prior to being able to retire. I was just like, what is, you know, what is security? And like, I'm going to get a degree in this thing. And like, I'm supposed to be certain that this will give me a job. Like suddenly what I was thinking of, like, I'll go and I'll study theater. And if I don't want to do theater, I'll become a drama teacher was not at all appealing to me. Within like that first year. And I, that after the first year, I took some classes in Chicago over the summer, just some acting classes, met some, like, at the time they were probably 38-year-old women that to me, I was like, oh my God, they have children and they're working all the time and they're loving their life. And they're,
Did you drop out of Purdue then? Or did you just,
I did.
Oh, nice.
But not until after I took classes that summer. That summer I took some classes and then, got cast in a show that was going to be that fall. And I, and you know, was like, I've made it. I'm an actor in Chicago. It's like a non-equity production, but I was like, I'm not going back to school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't go back.
It's also for entertainment. I went to Purdue for a year as well and then dropped out. Cause I'm like, well, I don't need a degree for entertainment. What am I going to drive myself into student debt? what was, when you got to Chicago, did you, I mean, it sounds like you got cast right away. Did you immediately feel connected to the city and feel like, okay, I got this. I know how to live as an adult in a big city.
No, I think that, I mean, I got a waiting tables job after a while that was at American Girl Place in Chicago. So love I it. Served the little girls, you know, and their dolls tea. Uh-huh. But it was actually like, looking back on it, it was like crazy money for what we were doing. Cause it was like, you know, it's a high ticket item. So I was doing well in that. And I was, and auditioning all the time. I loved the city. Like I wasn't scared of it at all. I loved public transportation. I know I had a car when I first was like deciding to leave. And at first I was like, I'll bring my car up in a couple months when I figure out the city. And then I was like, sell my car. I'm not going to have a car up here. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I did like, I got cast right away in a little show, but then quickly learned like, oh, well, that's just like a non-equity production. And certainly had my fair share of going to apartments for auditions and being like, where am I? I'm at somebody's home. Like, like what is this?
What was the production you got cast in?
It was a production of West Side Story.
I love it.
At the Theater Building, Chicago. I'm in fact, like still very close friends with a lot of people from that production. But yeah, I mean, and I got an agent, so I was doing like more commercial stuff because there's a lot of commercial stuff in Chicago, but wasn't doing comedy. I didn't do comedy for a few years into being there. It wasn't until an agent of mine was like, well, if you go to either one of the coasts, they're going to want to see that you've done improv, like, or else either someone
especially
in LA or New
York. Coming from Chicago, because I feel like, I feel like, one, I'm a big dum-dum and I didn't know Second City existed when I was in, you know, Northwest Indiana and Chicago. But I feel like Chicago has such a reputation for improv that if you've come out of Chicago, it's like, well, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Obviously you've done improv, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's basically what this agent told me was like, if you decide at any point to go to the coast and you haven't done it, they'll ask, they'll question, why were you in Chicago? Like, they'll just be like, why would you have wasted your time? Even though, you know, in my heart of hearts, the best work is being done there. I still feel that way because it does still have that work ethic of a very blue collar town with a lot of people like you and I that were raised by people that are just like, the work ethic is crazy. And it bleeds into every industry I feel in Chicago. And that includes the theater industry. So like people are just really there for the love of the game a lot of the time and creates really great theater work. And I think we're over the last 20 years, more recognized that Chicago has some really great theater and even film stuff happening. But at the time it was like, if you don't have Second City on your resume, then they'll just wonder why you were ever in Chicago. So, yeah, they're like,
it feels like it's either that, or unless you're a player at Steppenwolf, then what is what's your purpose in the city?
Right.
How long did you stay in Chicago then?
I was there 10 years.
Oh shit. I don't think I realized you were there for so long. And I mean, Chicago is such a great city. What were some of your favorite things that you did while you were there?
So I got into like taking classes at Second City and I quickly fell in love with improv and I love improv, but I will say like of the two paths, I'm much more a sketch comedian where I like to set it. I like, you know, that's my type A personality. It's love improv. Sure. I love people that are great at improv. And I do think that there are some groups that it can stand alone. However, I have in my day seen a lot of terrible improv that just isn't working. So I personally liked to find it as a tool to set a sketch.
It's such a great skill to have. And I think that it helps with so many other things. I think it helps with conversations. I wish more people would take a fucking improv class so they know how to have a conversation.
Yeah.
I think it helps me a lot with stand-up where I don't feel scared in scenes, but I'm very much like you where I'm like, this is a little bit too freeform for me, where especially like, I mean, you know, if you're on stage and somebody's like, and this is my dog, you know, I want to be like, fuck no, I'm not going to act like a dog, but you have to, otherwise the whole thing falls apart.
It's exhilarating to be like trusting someone else that much. But I did really love it and I never felt like so alive. And so I kind of like really drank the Kool-Aid and was taking a ton of classes. And then I was asked to do, because I was doing so much music goals and music stuff there. I was asked to audition for a group there that was a pretty big deal at Improv Olympic. You know, the times are always indicative of what's popular. So like this show was on at 10:30 on a Saturday night in Wrigleyville. So it was always packed and I knew of it. And it was called Cupid Players. Cupid has a hard on. So it was musical sketch comedy. So it was all relationship driven, musical sketch written.
So hard. That is so hard.
So that was like one of my favorite things that I did. And one of the things I did for like a tenure. I mean, I did that show for like 7 years.
Oh my God. That is like, I'm in such awe of musical comedy. Cause I'm like, it's such a different skill. it's a different skill. And it's like 10 skills all in one. I'm like, I don't know how you're keeping track of story and you're singing and it's wild.
It was really fun. And it was four guys and four girls for the most part. I mean, we had some in and out and like some understudies, but for the most part, it was four guys and four girls that knew each other very well. So it was a family and it was kind of always, I remember some teacher early on asking like, well, what's your goal? Or like, what would you want? And you know, this is like such a funny answer, but I always would say like, I want an ensemble comedy, like a Friends, and not because I like want to be a star like on Friends, but because I can't imagine anything being closer to high school theater than being on a show with someone for 8 years and like seeing that character go all these different, like being there for the life of a character. Like you're not going to get that in a movie when you do film a 2-hour movie.
That's so true.
What part of what really made me fall in love with this work was that I had like that family of friends when I was in the theater community at Crown Point, that was like exhilarating to like have your friends and be also creating with them. And so that's always what I felt is like probably the closest to that is being in an ensemble show where you're writing and you're a part of it and you're hanging out afterwards.
And it's so great because it gives you this whole, it's not just a show you're doing. Now it also comes with a community and a family.
Right.
And it's such a great, I mean, I did Second City out here and I was on the improv team for a while. And it's like, it's so nice to have a crew where you're like, people are looking out for each other and you know, everyone has separate interests outside of that group. And you all kind of like keep an eye out for projects for one another. And it's really nice. It's just really nice. That's all.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like I keep trying. That's what I keep chasing. Mm-hmm. You know, like I found myself in a group like that once I got to Chicago and I produced a show here for a bit that was like musical cabaret and we became like a little friend crew group that we're creating and producing things together. And so, you know, it's always to me, like the environment of anything I work on, I want it to be like a community or a family vibe.
Totally. I feel like also people say with such negativity, they're like, oh, well, you know, in Hollywood, it's all about who you know. And it's like, yeah, no, that's what's great. Because when you get in, you hire all your friends. Well, doesn't everybody want to work with all their friends?
And also that's like life point. Is about who you know. Yeah. Every that's industry everything. Is like
that's
that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the steel industry.
Exactly. Like you get your kid in because you can, you get them in the union because you can. It's just like, you know, it's just that nepotism. We weren't born into the nepotism of the entertainment industry. So it's harder to break in, so but
it's a little tough, but fun.
Yeah. But fun and like, yeah, life is about who you know and the connections you make.
So what made you decide to move to Los Angeles?
Yeah, I mean, I had like toyed with it for so long and being that I was able to work and, you know, really enjoy what I was doing, but also be 40 minutes from home, you know, was really nice. I wasn't someone that went home once a week or anything, but my mom came up a lot for dinners and I am really close to my family. And, my brother's was having, you know, my oldest brother was having kids. So it was like, it was always difficult to justify being so far from them, when I could have what I wanted and also be around my family. But there was just like a point that I reached, where I just felt like if I don't do it now, mm-hmm. I might always regret it.
Yeah.
And up to a point, I think I was always more pulled to New York. But by yeah. that point, I was, yeah, just as being like a musical person mm-hmm. and like loving theater. And for some reason towards, I think I was seeing a lot of my contemporaries through the comedy scene in Chicago coming out here and having success. Mm-hmm. And some of which were like, you know, there is a bit of a thing in Chicago, which is like, you know, if you're on the main stage at Second City, it's you've sort of passed go and you get the golden key from the city of Chicago that you're mm-hmm. allowed to leave because yeah. You've reached that point. And so those people you kind of always knew would like either get on SNL or like come out mm-hmm. here and get a writing job. And then there were other people that were just like taking a leap of faith on their own. Mm-hmm. And I would say those people were the ones that were really giving me a lot of inspiration.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, okay, well, maybe I don't need to like, you know, reach some pinnacle here, be a Steppenwolf company member mm-hmm. before I'm allowed to leave this city.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to be more pulled here. And ultimately it was like, okay, I think I need to make a change. I think, you know, I can always come back and this Absolutely. Is always home for me. But out of the two, New York or LA, like a bigger life experience difference is to be out here as far as yeah. atmosphere. And, you know, I mean, between New York and Chicago, they're very similar cities totally. As how you totally. Get around and the climate and all of that. So that was really the reason why I was like, okay, I'm going to have a different life experience. If I go yeah. to LA, I'm going to like hike and like, I'm a very, you know, active person and I'll yeah. enjoy the sun. And so that was really what pulled me more here. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like you just meet a different type of person. I think people here are more, what's the word I'm looking for? They're like, they kind of float around. And I don't mean like necessarily yeah. in a bad way where like, you know, Chicago people are more regimented and certainly in New York and we're here, people are like, yeah, you know, it'll happen if it happens, man. And
yeah. you're like, which sometimes all right. can be so awesome. And it, but you uh-huh. know, sometimes I'm like, okay. All right, let's answer a fucking email, okay?
yeah, definitely. So when you came out to LA, like, did you come out with any other friends or solo?
Well, I was married at the time, uh-huh. so I came with a husband. Uh-huh. I will, if I ever leave, I won't be leaving. Well, I might be leaving with a husband, but with a different husband. So I came out here with my ex and we were both looking for a different like change of pace in life. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, honestly, that gave me a lot of confidence to be able to do it because I wasn't coming out here alone. I had a support system yeah. in him. And then there were other friends that were already here that were kind of one that was I met through the yoga industry, uh-huh. Which I worked for in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I worked at a yoga studio for a long time. And she was out here and not at all in the entertainment industry. Yeah. And then another friend who was actually in that production of West Side Story who had been out here for a really long time. So those were my two people that were like two of my very closest friends mm-hmm. that were already out here. One who was like very well connected and working a lot in the industry, and one who wasn't at all. And to me, that meant like, oh, like they'll ground me, you know, yeah. because these are people I've known forever. And Nicola, who is still here and still mm-hmm. one of my best friends, like she's not at all a writer, actor, anything. So like, I'll have that type of person, in my life there. So yeah, there were lots of, and then of course, a lot of like mm-hmm. peripheral people that I wasn't as close to when I lived yeah. in Chicago that I got closer to. Once you're all thrown out here, I do feel like a lot of Chicago people just kind of start That's to great. Be like, oh, you're out here too. Let's meet up. Or there's a cookout of, you know, Chicago yeah. comedians, and then you reconnect with people. So
yeah, I feel like Chicago people and Detroit people are very much like that in Los Angeles yeah. where they really stick together.
Yeah.
Did you find once you were out here, because, you know, obviously LA is way more TV and film than theater.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, not that we don't have any, we have some good theaters, but they're kind of more hidden. Nobody really, they're not like the hot spots, you know, like TV and film are. Did you like that adjustment or was that,
At first I did. What was really funny was when I first got out here, I felt like I got a million auditions for theater stuff right away. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that is not what I came out here to do. Like if I wanted to, but you know, I took whatever auditions I could, and then I sort of refocused. I got offered like a touring production of something. And I'm like, I just got here and I didn't really come out here to do theater. So I had turned down that production, to stay in LA and sort of recommitted to myself that I wanted to do film and TV. And that was good for a few years. And I started, mm-hmm. I did reconnect with a friend that I was friends with in Chicago, but again, not as close as we got here. Shara Lassley, who was my writing partner for a really long time. We're still, we still work together. And so we kind of like reconnected here and we started writing some sketches together and we were like, hey, well, we like don't know a whole bunch of people here and we don't have as good of representation. Like, why don't we just start making things? And so that was like really fun to be creating my own work. And then this cat behind me is like scratching, sorry. And so that was good for a while. And then probably like three years into being here, mm-hmm. I was like, I have to figure out the theater scene here, or I need to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And that's when I started looking into doing cabarets. And that was in 2017. I was introduced to somebody and we started doing a monthly show tunes cabaret mm-hmm. for different local charities each month. So it was cool. Called For Good, a monthly night of show tunes to save the world. So it like really got me more in tune with the activism side of LA and like what people are doing. And I really, really believe wholeheartedly in helping locally. And like, I love the ACLU, but like, I think that everybody needs to get way more involved in their own communities because that's really where the real change is going to happen.
Yeah.
So that was really, really exciting. And I started doing that. And in doing that, I realized, oh, there's this like really ripe cabaret scene here. There's like way more theater than I even knew about because mm-hmm. I just wasn't plugged into it. So there is, it's underground. And like, it's just silly to me that there isn't a better scene here. It's more because I just feel like you can't get people out of their houses here to go see
live theater.
But the actors are all here. So it just doesn't make any sense why we don't have better work being done.
Absolutely. So when you started working with a writing partner, was this the first time mm-hmm. you started like really deliberately writing material for yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you find that they came easy or was that really, or was it challenging to make that adjustment?
Honestly, so when I was doing the work in the musical theater musical sketch show in Chicago. And this is not to speak bad about that show at all, but mm-hmm. there was a very specific like goal mm-hmm. For that show. It was off color. And I found myself when I first started writing for that show, feeling a bit not confident about my writing mm-hmm. because I kept getting coached in this other direction, which isn't like necessarily my voice. Uh-huh. And so then I started to be like, oh, to get the numbers in the show, I have to be somewhat vulgar or I have to be blue or like whatever the Wrigleyville crowd was expecting on a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And then I started, you know, getting things in that show, but it wasn't really my voice. And I think when I started writing for myself here is when I started to feel more confident that I wasn't just like trying to appease someone else. I was just like, this is what I have to give. And sometimes the humor is going to be from like just real life circumstances. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be on the kind of on the sweeter side, you know, like it's sweet, funny, not necessarily like vulgar funny. Yeah. And I think that experience was really invaluable to give to myself.
Yeah.
Because
it's so important to know what your own voice is and to be able to find your own voice. Especially when you're writing material for yourself and to move you forward because you're like, well, this is who I am overall. And this is who I am as a package deal, you know?
Right.
When did you start writing? Because I really want to talk about the series that you wrote. I'm so excited about this. when did you start writing it? How did you get the idea?
Yeah.
You know, obviously I know about it, but the listeners don't know.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah, the show that you're talking about, it's called Zen Room. It is a, mockumentary workplace comedy set in a small town yoga studio. And I worked, like I said, in Chicago, I worked at a yoga studio, and we used to laugh about it. And a lot of, people that worked for that company would say, this should be a reality show. And I remembered like one day being like, no, I think it needs to be scripted, you know? But at that time I wasn't writing and I didn't really have the confidence to write like a full show. I did have one friend that was like really pitching full shows at the time. And I remember kind of hitting her up to be like, would you want to write this with me?
Uh-huh.
And she was like, it's kind of your idea though, you know, yeah. Like, and that's, I think that that's a common thing that we do. And I've been asked that now that people think that like, I have so much confidence doing it as people will ask me to write with them, you know? And it's like, well, but that's kind of your thing, you know? But that was my way of doing it. And then I wrote a treatment like maybe in 2012, just to try it. And then it wasn't until I was living here in 2015 that I was not getting as many auditions, didn't really know people, and decided to write it down. And I had recently watched like High Maintenance, the web series. So that seemed to me like I could wrap my head around short form.
Because
I had been doing sketches, and suddenly I could see something that was on television that was shorter bites. And so that's the first like draft of it was these short form episodes. And it was really kind of out of the blue that someone, I was working at a deli downtown. One of the investors is kind of well known. He's like kind of like an interviewer on E. His name is Ben Lyons. And I was telling him about it. And he was like, oh, I'm going to put you in touch with someone. He put us in touch with a company that like helped us develop it. And this was like, I mean, I was living here for like 6 months, not even. So I'm like, oh my gosh, it's
this
all
is crazy.
You know? Yeah. But that's really where Shara and I started to work more and more together. Because that I had gotten this connection to Kids at Play, and they were like, well, you guys should write more stuff together. So you have more stuff online. So that was like, it was going back and forth. And then we wrote another pilot. We ended up producing that one because it was cheaper to do. It was just like four people and a couple of apartments. So we were able to produce that ourselves versus like a bigger scale thing in a yoga studio. But every time that we went into rooms, they kind of were interested in this piece. So it was always on the back of my mind. And then right before COVID happened, I just kind of got a flurry of people interested in doing it again, but in shooting it in Chicago.
I love
so it was like so crazy. And it just like seemed right. And somebody I knew in the yoga industry there, where they were leaving their yoga studio, and they were like, it's going to be vacant for a month. So you could like have a free location.
That's so perfect.
It was so crazy. And then I met a director, Lee Marie Williams, who was there. And she was like, look, like I like randomly met Sherry O'Terry at this film festival. Do you think she'd be right for one of these roles? I was like, yeah,
yes,
of course.
Absolutely.
Like we could figure that out.
Isn't it funny how when you're on the right path and you're doing what you really like and what speaks to you and like doing stuff in your own voice, all the pieces just fall together. Like you find an investor, you find a yoga studio, you are connected to Sherry O'Terry. Like,
yeah, it's crazy. You know? And this was all greenlit prior to COVID, and then COVID happened. And I don't know. I just never had a bone in my body where I was like, it's not going to happen. Cause it had been a journey for so long. It's like, it's lasted this long. I'll see it through, you know? And so, it could have been like a devastating moment of like, oh my God, now the world is going to end. And this thing I've always wanted to do is never going to get made. But I just kind of always felt that it would. And luckily, like Sherry stayed very connected to the piece throughout the year. And we wrote some stuff just to like stay creative, her and I, which was really, really awesome. And then like, we just pushed through and decided to, I mean, the budget grew by $1 million, not a real million, but like it really exponentially grew in order to account for COVID testing every day. And our rock star producers, Ashton Swinford and IMETN, they were just insanely amazing in Chicago, making sure it was all done. And it was very professional and safe. And we luckily had no one test positive on set or 2 weeks afterwards, which was kind of like the worst nightmare. It's like, okay, we're going to take the risk to do this, but a small production like ours, that's just taking a risk. If somebody gets COVID on set and shuts it down for 2 weeks, we're done. We're done.
Yeah. So especially like you said you had the studio space for a month. So it's like, well, that's, you don't have it indefinitely. And if you had to rent the space, it's like, fuck, there goes the budget.
Right. Right. So we did it March 1st through the 8th. Mm-hmm. And we are in the final 2 weeks of post, and then we're, you know, out there with our teams just shopping it, trying to pick up the first season that we shot, and then of course hoping to make more.
That's so cool. I love it so much. I love that it's like, I mean, I already said this, but something that is in your voice, is in your wheelhouse. Cause like you said, when you were working on the show in Chicago, they were like, in order to get your sketches through, you had to do like more vulgar stuff or whatever. And it's like, if that's your jam, then that's great. But if it's not, it's, I mean, you can jam yourself into that area. But I think if you're going against things you love, you're not going to be connected to people you love, and it's going to feel, it's going to make it feel more like work, and it's not going to be as fun or as fulfilling. Cause you're like, well, fuck, now I have to do this thing with so-and-so and I hate them.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, I can imagine I have friends and many people I've known through the years. And obviously I've watched all the documentaries on Saturday Night Live and seen how some people really thrive and some people really struggle. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine that it's similar to that. And that, I mean, on a much smaller scale, but that, you know, you're shooting for a product and to like appease someone else. Mm-hmm. And of course that makes total sense. Like there's a certain audience and a target audience on that they're all, you know, looking into data for from the network and all of those things. And so it makes sense that you're doing that, but it's sort of like a weird place to be able to survive because, you know, I just like ultimately my confidence was really shook by that experience, even though I love them. I loved what we did. And I loved those times with those people. There was a lot of times where I just like felt like I missed the mark, and it was because of my talent.
Yeah.
That I wasn't as funny as someone else, instead of it being like, oh, this is just like not my jam.
Yeah.
Like maybe my humor is going to be best served somewhere else and not for this like thing that they've got to do a proven thing. And yeah, they did. They had a 10:30 slot in Wrigleyville on a Saturday night. They had a lot of Cubs fans after a Cubs game that were
like
wasted.
An actual nightmare. Like
it was
absolutely, I've always rooted for the
in
Cubs,
a lot of ways,
but like Wrigleyville at 10:30 at night on a Saturday.
It was just like literally drunk
enough.
Drunk Cubs fans and bachelorette parties, just like the worst of the worst. And so, they really loved when we had a song that we sang about our vaginas, like to them, that was like, oh my God, we're singing about our vaginas. And I was like, wait, what?
And you're like, I'm not into this. It's just like, I think it also is proof that you have to work hard, but I don't think you have to fight hard in the industry. You know, like there's, for example, to bring it back to SNL, they do packets every June or whatever for writers. It's not my strength. It's not my sense of humor. I respect the fuck out of it. I know it's a hard job, but my manager was like, hey, want to submit? And I'm like, no, because it's a lot of work in a direction I don't want to go. But I think that there's a lot of people that do those things anyway. And it's like, you know, when you're first starting out and you do them anyway, like the things that are against your own sensibilities, I think that's one thing. But I think if you continue to do that throughout your career, you know, like 10 years in, I think if you're still actively pursuing jobs that you definitely don't want, it's like, why? Like, because so many people like operate out of fear, and you're not like, you can succeed just as well going after things you want. Then like, why put all that energy into going after something you don't want? It just doesn't make sense. And so, but, and like, and like you're proving with your series with Zen Room is you're succeeding at exactly what you want, which is so fucking cool.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that this far along the game, you know, it's nice to be able to like look back and say like all of these things in my life led to this, mm-hmm. you know, like my life experience, that job that I had for an amount of years, like me understanding this world so much makes the world even that much richer. Mm-hmm. And like that I wasn't only working in touring musical theater productions in my 20s. I did have like, I worked as a standardized patient and I did have other life experiences that I can like add up to writing. Yeah. And have you ever done like mapping to look back at your career? It's like a part of the artist's way, but you can mm-hmm. also just do it outside of it. But
I mean, I don't know of the technique, but I often look back on things and I'm like, oh, how did I get here? And I'll trace it all the way back to like I wrote on the Jim Jeffries show.
Right.
And that I'm like, oh, there was two other comics that were involved in me getting hired. And I met both of them initially through Twitter. And I'm like, this is, and like, I'll spare you like the long details, but it's like, I'm like, oh, I see exactly how like one funny tweet got this person to follow me. And then, you know, like we like started a friendship from there. And then I was in a couple of years down the road when I was up for this job, they helped me get it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's basically the same thing, except for you just kind of like see when mm-hmm. you were successful in mm-hmm. your life, not even just in career, like when you felt good in personal life and uh-huh. all of those things. And like when it's not been so good and like, can you connect the dots that are similar? And for me, it's always when I'm a bit ignorant. When I'm bit like when I first came to LA and I like didn't know the game here, mm-hmm. I was way more, not way more successful, but I feel like when I'm just like kind of writing on not playing the game or like absolutely. Trying to fit a mold, uh-huh. Even as an actor, it took me so long to not go into an audition room wanting to be whatever they wanted me to be.
Yes.
Like having my own clear point of view on the character, which seems like silly, right? Like I was a smart actor and I like appreciated the craft, but at the end of the day, somewhere deep inside me, I was mm-hmm. just trying to get the part and I just wanted to be what they wanted me to be versus like, this is what I have to offer this character. And if it's what you want for your project, you'll cast me. And if not, we don't see eye to eye on that character, you know? It took 15 years of auditioning to really get to that point where that's like what I can bring to mm-hmm. any audition. Yeah. And that's a much stronger place to be from. And it's just like where I personally have seen in like the mapping is when I'm kind of not paying attention to the rules mm-hmm. or trying to be what someone else wants me to be, then I'm like doing much better. That's
so important. I mean, I'm a big fan of not following the rules. I think you need to know the rules, but I sure. think you've got to break out of the rules. Like I have so many younger, and I have so many like younger comics or writers or whatever that are like, oh, well this has to happen this way. And I'm like, says fucking who? We're all making this up. This is all made up. There's no rules.
Yeah.
There's no constitution of entertainment. That's just do whatever you want to do.
Well, I have a great example from Zen Room is, I was looking for a Black actress for a role and we just weren't seeing the right person. And I knew someone in Chicago that I really respected. I had only met her once, but I loved her work. And I was like, I'm just going to DM her and see if she wants to audition. Just tell her what the project is. It's not paying a lot, but we have like a star attached and we're like hopeful with the legs that it could have. Mm-hmm. And like, girl, agents were not happy with me, but I just went around them and went around the casting mm-hmm. process to just straight up talk person to person with this actress and see if I could get her on board to do the project for probably less money than they wanted to, you know, to offer her a role to even audition for, but like give her the opportunity to decide she doesn't want to do the piece, you know? And absolutely. She ended up being the person that's doing the role. And I'm like so grateful because she's perfect. And as a writer, Like, I don't think I've ever had the experience where like someone has brought something to something I've written that makes me more inspired to write more for that character because I like see it more. So like, I'm always like, yeah, because they basically, I kind of got chastised. They were like, well, you are going through the right channels and like all this stuff. Crap. And I was like,
There's no right channels.
I'm done. I got who I wanted. So I guess in the end, was the right channel. I'm happy. Yeah.
It's also like, I mean, to call back to earlier, you know, at the top of the podcast, I would never have been able to go to New York had I asked my parents' permission, which is, by the way, the right channel. I was underage. But I'm like, fuck it. I'm going. They're not paying attention. And then I went. And I think that was a catalyst for a lot of things in my life, you know?
Aww. Are you going to find the video? Are you going to find the video to show?
Oh, I have it somewhere. I definitely.
Oh, you sent it to me.
Yeah.
I have it somewhere too.
And now I just moved. So I'm like, I don't know where the fuck it's at. But
okay, I'll see if I can find it.
So good. One last question for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
If your childhood self, like 11-year-old Ashley, could meet you now, do you think she would think?
Oh my God. She'd be really proud of her.
Hell yeah.
She would definitely be really proud of her. And I think she'd be amazed. I mean, I'm amazed at all the things I've done, honestly. I was a very chubby little 11-year-old. So I was a very, very rotund and chubby 11-year-old. With glasses and braces.
She'd be like, damn, I'm hot.
No, I mean, she'd probably be like, oh, great. We lost those extra pounds. But yeah, I mean, I just think that if I could say anything if I could say anything to that 11-year-old, it would just be like, you know, stick with it, and like really double down on the things that you love.
I love it so much. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Ashley. It was so good to see you and talk to you. And I'm so excited for everyone to hear this.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm so glad I finally got to do it.
Thank you so much for listening. Once again, that was Ashley Joyce. You can find her on Instagram at Ashley Joyce Bush. And I am Lisa Curry. You can find me on Twitter at Lisa_Curry and on Instagram at OlympianLisaCurry. As usual, if you're enjoying the podcast, please like, subscribe, leave a nice little comment. Please no mean comments. If you're not enjoying the podcast, keep it moving. Go listen to something else. I don't give a shit. Also, if you want to see me live, I've got some shows coming up. Very excited to tell you that I'm opening for Jim Jeffries at The Mirage in Las Vegas on July 30th and 31st. So if you're hoping to see me, you can see me there then. All right, we'll see you next week. Bye.